I'll be honest, I've had pull requests submitted to me that are probably, they changed dozens of files and hundreds of lines, sometimes per file. I'm not going through that with a fine-tooth comb. I don't have the time to do that.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Continuous Delivery Office Hours, where we delve into the topic of modern software delivery. I am your host, Tony Kelly, and I'm joined by Bob Walker and Steve Fenton. We are back from the sunny coast of southern France, back to the rain in Ireland for myself, but it was nice while it lasted. Last time, on the last episode, we talked a little bit about how to know whether you're deployable or not, and continuous delivery meaning that you should be able to deploy at all times. Slight change of direction this time, but still related. We are going to delve into what is the best branching strategy for continuous delivery. And I'll pass it over to Bob, the feeling that you've some strong opinions on this, Bob.
Yeah, but first, you can't just drop in there like we just got back from Nice without providing a little bit of context as to how we, you know, why we were in Nice and what we were doing, why the three of us were in Nice together, because that just doesn't make any sense. You can't just drop it in there. So we were there for what we call our RKO or our revenue kickoff. And so it's when it's not just the revenue organization, but we have marketing, we have our support organization, we have R&D, we have our executive leadership team. We all come together in one spot about once per year. And so this year we elected to go to Nice. Very fortunate that it was actually very sunny there for a few of the days there. So you're able to get out and enjoy some of the nice weather. But yeah, you can't just drop that in there, especially if you're watching this in the United States and you're shoveling out of a massive snowstorm like myself today. So I went from 70 degrees Fahrenheit on Monday when I was able to ride my bike outside, and that was in Omaha, to lots and lots of snow. So it's crazy town. But to answer your question, what is the best branching strategy? I'll throw this out. I'll throw a slight curveball at you, and I'll say, what do you think is the worst branching strategy, and why do you think it's the worst? And I'll throw that first over to Steve, because I think that would be an interesting conversation, because then we could talk about why we think the best is what we're going to say.
Yeah, and I think we've already discovered the first thing about branching strategies is that it is a super hot potato.
Yeah.
So we're going to be throwing stuff back and forth a lot here, trying to throw everyone else under the bus so we don't have to say it. I'm going to say the worst branching strategy. I'll go abstract first, and then I'm going to name names. So the worst branching strategy is when you copy a branching strategy that works really well for someone else because of their circumstances. Maybe they have 30,000 engineers, and so a normal branching strategy doesn't work for them. They have to invent something bizarre. And then you try and bring that into your company that has 1,000 engineers, and actually it's really inappropriate because it was designed for a scale that you're not working at. And I suppose I would then follow that up by saying, it's probably Gitflow is the worst branching strategy because that is a perfect example where it was very much a contextual idea that someone had, probably worked for them. That's great. But if you try and use Gitflow, you're going to literally step on rakes all day long. I don't know if that's the one you were thinking of, Bob, when you said about the worst branching strategy.
Yeah, no, I was kind of thinking the same thing. But to your point, I would also add in there, it is wholly dependent upon your version control system. Now, naturally, we're all going to think about Git when it comes to the branching strategy. We can't help ourselves because let's be honest with ourselves and call a spade a spade. Git has won. It is the most popular version control system out there. But if you come from, you say, Team Foundation version control, or you come from SVN, their branching strategy won't really be applicable to how you want to branch when it comes to, say, Git. And so I would also say it's wholly dependent upon the technology. Now, that being said, obviously Git is the most common version control, so that's what we're going to focus on for the rest of this conversation. And I would come back to you and agree, Gitflow is 100%, I think, the worst one out there. It is great for a very specific use case, and I think it's when you are developing, say, commercial off-the-shelf software or COTS. And that is when you have to have multiple versions that you have to support. So, for example, I worked at a company where we had to support multiple versions of this application because our customers, they would install it on their tablets. And they would basically pick and choose what version that they wanted to run. And it was dependent on a whole range of situations. And I wouldn't get into all of it, but all we have to know is that they had it. That's the reason why they had it. So in that particular case, yes, having something like GitFlow where you have to support multiple versions makes a ton of sense. But if you're doing something where it's a web app or an API or it's containerized or any number of those other things where it's really kind of running on a server and customers are just asking it, you know, accessing a single version, it's like you said, you're stepping on rakes all the time.
I worked one place, it was a Subversion shop, and they really wanted to do this thing where they would create branches for each version that had gone out to customers. And this might be cheating, but I said, let's not create the branch before we need it. We know which commit is the last commit in that version of the software that we sent out. If we need a branch to do some kind of hotfix on it, we'll retrospectively branch from that commit so that we can then have that experience of being able to fix something just against that version without bringing in all of the other changes we did. And we agreed to do that, and we never had to.
Oh, yeah. And I 100% believe that. And I'll also, I have another story where I worked at a particular company and we were switching from Subversion to Team Foundation version control. And we were trying to apply the branching strategy that we were using in Subversion into Team Foundation version control. And it just wouldn't work because that's just not how that particular tool is designed. And it's not like there was a fault of either tool. It's just that it just didn't work whatsoever. They just weren't compatible. So again, wholly dependent upon your scenario and your situation. So let's go back to the original question of what is the best branching strategy? My personal opinion is that it's trunk-based. And so it's the trunk-based branching strategy or the GitHub flow-based. But they basically, if you follow trunk-based, they are pretty much the same where you have a main branch or the primary branch, if you want to call it that. And then you have very short-lived branches off of that where you make very small changes and you merge into your main or primary branch fairly frequently. So a branch shouldn't live any more than a couple of hours at most a day, but you shouldn't be having these long-running branches. And I think that's where other branching strategies, they kind of promote these long-running, you know, branches. So you hear about feature branches and you hear about hotfix branches or release branches where you have these super long-lived branches that last for days or weeks or even months. It just doesn't work out. You turn into a merge nightmare.
Yeah, and the research kind of backs this up. So in the Dora research, they talk about trunk-based development, and the edge that they found around it was that it has to be like three branches or fewer active at once. And they have to be merged like in a short time, no long-lived branches. So I suppose trunk-based development would be that you're just committing everything to trunk like as you go. But we can expand that to allow some branching as long as it's super minimal. And I think there's a trade-off here between you want to do some validation of what you're about to put into the main branch, like just your own personal, am I putting good quality stuff in? And that's the reason that you would hold on to it for like an hour, right? Because you've done some code, maybe you've done a few rounds of TDD, you've implemented some stuff, and maybe do a bit of refactoring. But you want to make sure before you commit it, you've run a bunch of tests. Your linting all says that you're in good shape and everything builds. You know, all of those things need to happen. So that's the thing you're getting by having a branch. As soon as you go for a longer lived branch, any benefit you have from that momentary isolation is swallowed up by just the pain that you cause of everyone being out of date with each other on the same code base. And that just swallows up any benefits you get of having a branch that's more than 3 hours old.
Yeah. And that's actually a really good point. Like if you go to the trunk based development, I believe there's a website that you can go to. And if we're smart, we'll include a link in the description down below. There's really kind of two types of ways that you can do that. You can do where you commit directly into main. And I think that works out really well if you have a fairly small team or it's a fairly small application, maybe one or two or three developers at most. It makes a lot of sense when you have a lot of developers. So, for example, at Octopus, Octopus Deploy itself is a monolith, and so we have many, many, many teams. Obviously, committing directly into main just is not a good idea. And so the big reason behind that is because you always want main to be in a state in which it can be deployed. And so really the idea behind having a branch is you have that isolation, as you allude to, and it allows you to perform a series of checks, allows you to perform a series of tests as part of the pull request, as well as before you even submit the pull request. I get this isolation, I can test it out. And ideally, you can commit that branch, and you can have it get to that particular branch gets deployed to, say, an ephemeral environment, and you can start getting feedback. And you can even go out to your, say, product manager or your business owner and say, hey, is this what you're thinking? Is this matching what your expectations are? To get that fast feedback. And then once you're ready, then you can merge that in. But again, you shouldn't be making massive changes in each of these branches. You should be dividing up the work into small bite-sized chunks, because when you merge into main, big changes, a lot of changes, and after these long-running feature branches, the number of things that could go wrong because of all the different changes that you made is so high. And I think that's the folly. So yes, branching, but short-lived, and they should be merged fairly quickly.
Yeah, and people often say, you know, hey, but I have a branch, it's long-lived, but it's okay because I am pulling from main regularly to keep my branch up to date.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like there's this false sense of security, because if everyone is doing that, it means the main branch doesn't represent everyone's code.
No.
Because all of the changes are out in all these other branches. So pulling from main doesn't mean that your team is all up to date with the code base, right? It means that your long-lived branches are all just heading off in different directions and getting further and further apart. And then it becomes a game of like, if I commit first, not a problem for me. But whoever comes next is like, like you've literally renamed a file that I've made major changes to. And like there's a file deleted that I've made changes to. And like semantically, we've both changed the same function. And which of those changes are supposed to fit together? And it becomes like super difficult as soon as you start doing that.
Well, and you end up wasting so much time constantly merging main back into your branch, because to your point, let's say that you and I both had very long running feature branches and then Tony made a change. Well, you pull your changes in and like, great. And then you merge your change into main. Well, then I pull your changes into my branch. Well, then I have to spend a whole bunch of time reconciling what all of those changes are. Because when you have these long running feature branches, the greater the chance that you're going to have this some sort of merge conflict. And I remember working on an application, and there was probably about, I want to say about 20 developers, maybe 15. And we had merge conflicts just all the time because we were doing these long running feature branches where we would work on something for even a week or two. And it was just a complete pain to do anything because we kept having all of these merge conflicts. And so I remember you'd carve out 2 or 3 hours on a Wednesday afternoon just to reconcile all the merge conflicts. Or then when you did the merge into main, when you submit the pull request, then you would have to go back through and then reconcile it. The other problem is when you have those merge conflicts, how do you know which line of code wins, which is quote unquote correct? And so you pick line of code, but then that impacts another line of code way down farther in the function or in the method. And you didn't realize that. And then you try to build it and then all your tests start failing. And then you just go on, oh my gosh, what is going on here? Or even worse, it doesn't fail, but you introduced one of those runtime bugs that are just so much fun to try to fix and solve. So again, when you have these long running branches, that's when you start running into all of these different issues.
Yeah. And like changes that people have made start going missing as well. I work on one project where a developer kept on making this change in a very high throughput piece of code where lots of people were changing that area. It's like if you were doing that code as a crime scene type investigation, this was like a hot area of the code. And I think he implemented it 3 or 4 times because other people would get a merge conflict and just kind of like choose their changes and his changes would disappear. And then everyone would be like, won't use a real name. They'd be like, Dave, I thought you did this change. It's marked as complete. And it'd be like, yeah, but now it's been overwritten back to not being there again. And like, it's such a waste. Like, we're all looking for productivity. And this is like a perfect example of where we are literally just like losing hours and losing productivity.
And it's not just the developer hour you got to think about. It's also if you have a QA team. So we had QA, we ran into the exact same thing with those 15 to 20 developers. We had three QA people on our team. And we'd say, okay, this is complete. It's ready to test. And then they would run their suite of tests and go, it's not ready to test. And you know, that suite of tests that doesn't take a it doesn't take 2 seconds to run. We're talking hours to run all of these tests. And so they're getting extremely frustrated with us because we're saying things are complete when they're not complete. So we've said that it shouldn't live very long. I guess what would be a good checklist in your mind of what you should do? And what are some of the things that you should do inside of that branch before you're ready for it to merge? Because I do think that you can't just YOLO it up and say, oh, I made this change and let's call it good. I think in my mind, it's I make the code change. I have the appropriate tests. Those tests run successfully locally. I've committed this change. It's been successfully built. It's all the tests have been successfully run. And it's passed all of the necessary security checks. So if you say running Trivi, for example, looking for any sort of vulnerabilities in your third-party packages or anything along those lines, is there anything else that you're kind of thinking of that we should have kind of this minimum check? Because obviously we want to merge into main rather quickly, but the only way to do that is we have to have the appropriate test coverage because we want main to always be able to be deployed to production if at all possible.
Like we use pull requests here. We're distributed teams, so it kind of makes sense. It's difficult to pair program when I'm working on a feature with someone who's in another country in a different time zone. So we use pull requests. The pull request should, within about 5 minutes, do all of the checks that you need. And depending on what you're working on, all of the things that Bob has just said, code scanning, have I accidentally committed secrets, like all of that stuff can be automated and part of that initial check. And you might decide that you want to have a longer running set that run after that. But I should know within 5 minutes if my pull request is like worth letting another human being see. And if it's not, it's great because I can immediately carry on and fix whatever problem I introduced and then kind of commit again. And 5 minutes later, it says, yeah, you got it right this time.
And there's always this, I think there's always this healthy tension because we want main to always be able to be deployed to production. I think that is critical for continuous delivery. That is the primary thing. Main should always be ready to deploy. You should always be in a deployable state. So in order to do that, you have to have this automation. You have to have this test. But we're also saying you should make small, rapid increases, small changes, but make them fairly quickly to main. And ideally, you're deploying those changes, again, to production at very least once a week. Maybe once a fortnight if you're pushing it, depending on how active that particular application is. But again, you're always going to have this healthy tension behind it. When you're making these small changes into your main branch, or you're making these small changes as part of your pull request, it also enables a more robust pull request process by having the person that's reviewing the change. Because I'll be honest, I've had pull requests submitted to me that are probably, they changed dozens of files and hundreds of lines, sometimes per file. I'm not going through that with a fine tooth comb. I don't have the time to do that. But if you submit a pull request that you've changed, say, 5 files and each, you know, and maybe 10 lines each per file, you can really kind of dive in and understand what that change is trying to do. And I think that's also incredibly important that you're going to have more robust and you're going to find a lot of those issues to your point of, oh, you should use this wrapper or, hey, I think this method, the way you've implemented it, is going to end up in a race condition. Have you thought about this particular scenario? Or I don't see you have a test covering this scenario. So there's a lot of tangible benefits when you do short-lived branches and you're committing changes fairly rapidly.
Could I ask? So it might be a, you might have answered this indirectly, Bob, in what you just mentioned there, but if I am using those long-running feature branches, is it fair to say then that you're no longer doing continuous delivery, or does continuous delivery still, you look at it more from your state of main, if that makes sense?
If it's always in a deployable state, then yes. I would argue yes, you are doing continuous delivery, but you're just making it harder on yourself. So you're taking the hard path rather than the easy path. So I just got done shoveling my walk. I opted to use a shovel instead of a snow thrower. So doing these long run feature branches is kind of like using a shovel instead of a snow thrower. It's like, yeah, there's better ways to do this type of approach.
What you've done is you've said my main branch is deployable, but my code isn't integrated.
Yep.
And so my code is not deployable. So you've struck out on two separate paths where, you know, if we wanted to do that kind of continuous delivery, we could just stop making changes to the code, right? And it's always then deployable. So you can kind of like, there's like a dangerous, this is like walking as close to the edge as you can, I think, if you do that. It's just so much better to be able to say, our code is deployable at all times as a team. And if I've made a change, I've integrated it and it's deployable. And we're practicing doing that more often so that we can identify any pain in doing that or any friction in doing that. And then we can work on how we eliminate that to make our deployments more reliable, repeatable, safer.
I think one of the things that might come up is that naturally some of the objections will be, well, you know, features, they don't take a couple hours to build. They could take weeks, if not months, to finish doing it. And I think that's a fair point. But this is why the other aspect of this is, we don't really have time to get into it, but this is why you also need to leverage feature toggles. So when you're building a feature, you incrementally build the feature. So let's use Platform Hub, which we recently released last year. When we built it, it wasn't like we just released Platform Hub onto the world and said, okay, good luck everybody else. It was a very slow thing. So like, for example, we have a brand new section in Octopus Deploy. Well, one commit basically added that brand new section. And then another commit went through and said, okay, or not commit, but another branch came through and said, all right, now we're going to add permissions. Now we're going to do this small thing. And so you're making a very small incremental approach. And then over time, that's what builds out the feature. And then ultimately, that's really what you're doing in those long running feature branches, is you're making those incremental changes. The big difference is that when you kind of come to a good stopping point and you say, all right, this is ready to get merged into main, and I'm just going to do it right now. And so that is kind of like that big difference between the two.
Yeah, and it means if someone is going to make improvements to your role-based access control, like utilities and modules, your new stuff gets those changes too, rather than you 6 months later realizing that your stuff now won't work because the role-based access control has moved on in that time. And there's a new provider for how you access the database that you haven't used in your branch, you know? So yeah, I kind of think the 3 hour mark is kind of about right. Like, you know, 5 minutes of waiting for a build every 3 hours is not a huge amount. And if you're doing Pomodoro, like, you could commit at the end of each 25 minutes if you think you have a version, and then you go and take your break. And when you come back from your break, you'll have a little green light or a little red light.
It extends beyond code. So we have our docs as well, and our docs are all version control. And I made the mistake, even though I was writing about trunk-based development, I made the mistake, I'm going to make all these changes to the docs. And then I submitted them, and it was just a big disaster. And it took us forever to kind of work on this branch. And now I'm kind of coming back through. It's like, okay, we need to make some updates to, I think it's the upgrade section. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on, I want to update this one page, and that's all I want to do. I don't want to do anything else. I know there's a lot of other stuff that I want to do. I just want to focus on updating this one page and making this one thing better. And that's what I'm going to commit. And that's what's going to get pushed out to production, rather than trying to do this big bang and good luck everybody else. So trunk-based development also lends itself nicely to, again, more rapid releases because, oh, we're done. Okay, let's go ahead and push this out to production, as opposed to, again, when you have these long-run feature branches, when you do merge into main, then you have this really extended testing period that the QA people have to do, or your business owners have to do, or your business analysts, or your product managers. They have to go through and they have to verify everything that changed. And then they push that up to stage, and then you repeat that effort, and then you push it out to finally to production. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting thing. And this idea of these long-running feature branches, you want to de-risk yourself, but at the end of the day, you actually increase the risk. And I think this is kind of a natural human behavior. Oftentimes you want to de-risk, but by de-risking something, you increase risk substantially. And it's almost like you can't help yourself because you think this feels right. This is slower. It's more methodical, but at the end of the day, it's actually even worse.
I think that's our intuition problem again. If something hurts, we just want to do it less.
Yes.
But actually, if we do it more, it stops hurting. And anyone who went out during RKO in Nice and did those runs, those kind of regular runners, that's not painful for them. If I go out and do a run, it's very painful. So I need to kind of apply that same mindset to that scenario.
Well, it's like bike riding, because I refuse to bike ride on a trainer during the winter this winter, or normally I do. And then I went out bike riding this weekend because it was so nice. And my sit bones didn't have those calluses. And so when I sat down on the second day to go bike ride, I'm like, oh, this was really painful. But it's so the natural inclination is, oh, you should rest and not go on this bike ride. I'm like, no, I got to power through this so I can bike ride again and again and again. Unfortunately, because now it's snowed, I can't do that. So now I'm going to have to rebuild those back up. But this is just, it's that natural thing.
I also, on that run, paired up with some Australians who normally run a lot faster than me. So I also felt the pain. So yes, I agree. Have you a question for us this week to wrap up, Steve?
Yeah, I suppose I was going to ask, tell me the worst time you ever had to manage a merge of a branch. What was the worst thing that's ever happened as part of that?
Ooh, I would say when we merged and it took us 2 days to merge into Maine, to resolve all of the merge conflicts and going through, and then the level of effort for testing to make sure that we didn't merge the wrong thing. And when I say it took us this long, the reason it took us this long is because we literally had to go to every single developer. And if two developers worked on the same function or in that same area, they would have to kind of duke it out to determine which was best. And oftentimes it wasn't I'm going to pick developer A, I'm going to pick developer B changes. It was, we're going to have to combine those changes as part of this merge experience. And so we had never tested that code until we got into the pull request process. So that was why it took so long. And that was something.
I'm a marketer, so I don't have like all of these war stories, but similar to what Bob mentioned with docs, a lot of our content at Octopus lives in a GitHub repo and is in Markdown, and there are spell checks and everything else that goes with it. And falling into that trap again of like, oh, we need to migrate this content from A to B, wherever it's going. And you do it all in a big batch. And then it's like, oh, all the spell checks, we need to go through them. So again, probably not as painful as what Bob just described, but when you're in there and you're like, oh my God, why did I do 100 pages at once? This doesn't feel like a smart plan anymore. So it's easy fix. It just takes time to go through.
Yeah, and the downside of that is you have to, like, it's like you basically have to carve out the entire day to resolve all of that stuff. Whereas if you just did it, hey, I'm just going to do 2 pages a day. And you're just like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to focus, you know, a half hour a day on improving this and just get that pushed out there. Yeah, you're not going to get it done as, quote unquote, as fast as you think it will. But in reality, you probably would have gotten it done faster if you did like 2 or 3 pages a day versus trying to do all 100 of them in one go.
Yeah, my one is actually a bit of a guilty story. I was young and stubborn, and I joined a team that didn't do trunk-based development, having been on a team that had done it for some time. And I was sat next to someone who was dead set that trunk-based development was not the way to go, and he was always going to do his work in a branch. So I basically continued to do trunk-based development and took a little bit of enjoyment every Friday, which was when he did his code merges, when he went, oh, I've got all these conflicts. Like, this is so irritating. And I'd just be sat there quietly because I never had a merge conflict because I just committed so frequently. I never built up that kind of volume that made it go toxic. So yeah, that's my story. I feel very guilty about it. And again, I won't use real names, but I'm sorry, Dave. That I did that to you. I was young and I didn't know how to coach and make the situation better. So I just subverted the system in a way.
That's the downside, I think, of like a trunk-based development, is that to get the true benefits, everyone has to be on board. If you have the Daves of the world that are like, no, I'm going to do it my way and I'm going to still have these long-run feature branches, they're the ones that experience the most pain, and you still have that pain that exists on the team. Like, everyone on the team has to be on board with it. to get the full benefit.
Yeah, and that kind of goes for all of those team rules, you know, like your coding style and all of those things. Like the whole team has to kind of move together on it. Otherwise, you just end up with people like working against each other. So yeah, don't be like young me.
Very good. Thank you both very much. Until the next time, we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one, everyone.